Have you been listening to the podcast and getting value from the show? If so, I've got a small favor to ask, because over the next few months, we're going to be making some changes to better serve you. Now, I could keep creating episodes based on what I think would be most helpful, but I would much rather get this right. So instead of guessing, I want to understand where you are right now and the real challenges you, your organization, and your team are facing. That's why I've put together a very short 90-second survey. It'll help me better understand you and how I can serve you at a much higher level. And as a thank you, the first 30 people who complete it will receive a free signed copy of one of our books. To take part, just go to the show notes and click the link titled Leadership Survey. Or you can go directly to letsgrowleaders.com/podsurvey. PODSURVEY. It'll take less than 2 minutes. I really appreciate your input. It will genuinely help shape the future of the show.
People are taking a cue on how to be resilient by watching you. It's not what you're saying. It's not what you're typing or sending. It is how you are showing up. So there's a whole lot of talk around being purpose-driven. I think we got to talk about being presence-driven.
Hey, it's David. And you're listening to Leadership Without Losing Your Soul, your source for practical leadership inspiration, tools, and strategies you can use to achieve transformational results without sacrificing your humanity or your mind in the process.
Hey, welcome to the show today. You are in the right place. Podcast helping human-centered leaders master communication to accelerate your team's performance, reduce stress, and build a career with the respect and influence you deserve. I'm your host, David Dye, president of Let's Grow Leaders. And in this episode, you're going to get tools to help you reduce stress, boost your psychological capital, pave the way to greater productivity. And I love this one, coach yourself into a thriving future. And here to help us achieve all those things today is Simon T. Bailey, the world's leading expert on brilliance. Simon has served as sales director of the Disney Institute, five other hospitality companies. And over the past 20 years, his scrappy, and I love this definition or distinction, his scrappy personal development practice has served 2,300 organizations within 54 countries. That is impressive for sure. LinkedIn Learning hosts three of Simon's courses that have reached 250,000 plus students in more than 100 countries. Simon's the author of 11 books, the latest of which is our topic today, Resilience at Work. How to coach yourself into a thriving future. Simon T. Bailey, welcome to Leadership Without Losing Your Soul.
David, it's so good to be with you. Thank you for having me.
It is our pleasure. I was so excited to see your book coming out and know that you're going to be available to have this conversation. So I've been looking forward to it. So Simon, I ask every guest, and I want to ask you the same thing. Before we get into resilience and brilliance and your work, can you take us back, and you can go as far back as you want to here, to your earliest memory of yourself as a leader, however you would define that?
So when you join Disney, one of the joys you have is you receive an invitation to have breakfast with the president. So, and this is back in the day, David, when you receive the yellow envelope with the string around it and the invitations inside. This is 8-track cassette tape days.
Going back.
So I show up at Disney's Yacht Beach Club Resort on this particular day. And if you're supposed to be there at 7:30 a.m., I got there at 6:45 a.m. And I noticed there were name cards on the table where everybody was supposed to be sitting. And I noticed my name card wasn't next to the president. So what would you do if you were in my shoes, being a little bit of the eager beaver? So yes, I do a little switcheroo. And now I'm sitting next to the most powerful man in the Walt Disney World Resort. So at Disney, you're on a first name basis. And he says, hi, Simon. I said, hi, Al. And I said, Al, I got a question for you. What do I have to do to get ahead here at Disney? And here's what he said. He said, you need to know who you are and you need to know why you're here. And when he said it, it just went right over my head. I didn't get it. I didn't get it. I gave him the screensaver face. And it hit me about 10 years later what he really meant. I wasn't there to do a job, because a job stands for just overboard. As a leader, I was to find out and figure out how to create a moment, be because Disney was in the business of creating magical moments. And when I got it, I was like, oh, snap, that's what leadership really is about, harnessing micro moments every day.
I love that it took, you know, and we all have those lessons, right, that take us 10 years to like, you know what, but it seeks it, it gets there, it did the work. Okay, so let's get those two principles from, and what was the president's name again, Al?
His name's Al Weiss.
Al Weiss. So who you are.
And why you're here.
Who and why, who you are and why you're here. And those are great questions for all of us in any moment. And I mean, and they're a foundation, aren't they, for resiliency, as ultimately as we're getting into talking about resiliency. If we know those things, we're gonna be able to bounce back in some different ways. So our guest today, Simon T. Bailey, the name of the book is Resilience at Work, How to Coach Yourself into a Thriving Future. And Simon, you did some research and you have this stat that I found fascinating. 82% of working Americans think great leaders have to inspire resilience in those they lead for individual and organizational success.
Yes.
I thought there's some interesting wording in that. 82%, which is the vast majority of the people you surveyed, say leaders need to be a great leader, you need to inspire resilience. Not teach it, not equip it, inspire it. Why that wording?
So when we crafted the question, a question that really unpacked resilience is we asked working Americans, how do they define resilience? And they define it as perseverance, grit, and problem solving. So in other words, David, when I see my leader persevering, going through it, solving problems, not by telling me what to do, but asking me, what do you think we should do? Their resilience is rubbing off on me, figuratively, not literally, on how I should show up every single day. So the word inspire simply means to breathe life into. So I literally come alive as I see my leader modeling resilience for me.
Breathing life into. That's interesting. I didn't know that was the definition of inspire, to breathe life into. And so, and one of the ways that just pulling out a practical touch there that you just said is asking. That when we're asking people for their ideas, and we talk a lot about that in our Courageous Cultures work and so forth, when we're asking somebody for their ideas, that's actually contributing to their resilience, you're saying.
Totally, because see, the word education comes from a word called educare. Educare means to draw out. So how I draw your brilliance out of you is I immerse you on a question to discover the answer so that it builds your resilience, self-efficacy, agency within you. And the leader is no longer running an adult daycare center because he's empowering people, in Marie Forleo's words, to have figure out ability.
I love it. And, you know, just you're making my mind go in about 15 different directions at the same time. When we're asking people for their ideas, part of the reason that's creating resiliency is as people realize they have answers, they become more self-reliant.
Absolutely. Everyone has the data that's in the ocean of their soul, but until that data is stirred up within them, they're kind of just like lights are on, nobody's at home. They work hard enough to keep a job, do just enough to keep them getting fired. So when that leader inspires them through questions, inviting them to be a part of the solution, all of a sudden purpose kicks in and they're like, wait a minute, I matter. I have a voice. I have something to say.
Just so much at the heart of human-centered leadership. And obviously we are big fans of that concept. So in the book, now you just mentioned that the people that you surveyed about resilience, they defined it, American workers defined it in a particular way, but you go through a number of different definitions of resilience in the book, which I thought were important. And so one of them you start with is the capacity to endure and recover quickly from difficulties, which I think many of us would kind of think that way. But then there's some others that you quote, Dr. Helen Herman, the ability to maintain or regain mental health despite experiencing adversity. And that one really called out to me. And then another one from McKinsey that I thought was critical, adapting for growth. Mm-hmm. So there's this aspect of, okay, as if we're going to be resilient, we want to be able to maintain and regain our mental health. We want to have the ability to recover quickly. And as we're in all of that, to adapt for growth going forward. So That's a big basket of definitions, but I think that really they encompass everything we're talking about with resiliency. So over to you. Let's start getting practical. How do we become those things? How do we coach ourselves? How do we develop resiliency?
So let's start with the first one. I was taking a course on positive psychology from Dr. Martin Seligman out, University of Pennsylvania. And one of the things he teaches is asking the question, what went well today? So for everyone listening to us, can we just start with what went well? Number one. Number two, what is right about you? Because so many times, David, in some environments, something happens and then we build up a story around what's happened and the story becomes more powerful than what happened. So zeroing in on that question, what's right about you, is to understand, here are my strengths, here are my areas of opportunity. And notice I said opportunity instead of weakness, because it's an opportunity to learn, unlearn, relearn, and get better. And then I think number three, in a practical sense, is how do we begin to reflect on how we are growing? Years ago, I interviewed a guy named Harry Kramer. Harry's the former chairman and CEO of Baxter Healthcare, phenomenal person, and teaches clinical leadership at the Kellogg School. And I said to him, I said, in your 40-year career, what is the one thing you encourage people to think about as it relates to being resilient? And Harry said, for the last 40 years, I reflect. I ask myself, how did I grow? What difference did I make? And how am I going to add value tomorrow? Mm-hmm. And I think in that third takeaway, David, inviting people to say, do I take time to carve out at the end of the day and reflect? And you do it every day.
I love these questions. And that final one, how am I going to add value tomorrow? And I'm curious, when you talked to him, did it take another 10 years or did you get that one in 10 minutes?
Listen, Harry's got it so dialed in. I mean, when you run a $12 billion company, he's got it dialed in. So he caught it a lot quicker. I was on the slow bus at the time.
Simon, one of the things that I really appreciated, just as you're telling us these stories, are the questions that you're asking and how you're learning from all, you know, the leaders and the people that you're meeting along the way. So these three questions, I just want to recap these for our listener. Some really practical things, get started right away. What went well today? And just ending your day, what went well? And how, you know, gratitude for that. And by the way, you know, we talk about this when you're doing project wrap-ups, or call them what you will, after action reviews, or we call them post-project celebrations. But you know, if you're leading a team and you finish something, take time to ask what went well. And my favorites are, what went well that you weren't expecting? Because there's always something for us to learn in that, right? So what went well today? Yes. What is right about you? Coming back to, and I got asked that question this past Sunday. I was at a after church gathering and they were doing some questions. And that was one of the questions. What's one thing that's right about you that you really appreciate about yourself? Wow. And just having to really answer that truthfully is, that's empowering. It really is.
I love the question. And if you notice, David, the third one, that whole reflection, a part of why I tee up questions is because if we really talk human-centered leadership, the quality of your questions determine the quality of your answers. You know your data. So the questions just invite you into a deeper conversation.
And the questions that you're asked, so you want to coach yourself. I mean, that's what the subtitle of the book, when we're talking about resilience at work, it's coaching yourself is ultimately what we're trying to get here. Coaching yourself to a thriving future. And that's what these questions do. What went well today? What's right about you? And how can you reflect on how you're growing and how you're going to add value tomorrow? Some brilliant questions, some really practical things we can do. Well, let's keep going. So in the book, Simon, you talk about four characters. You introduce us to four characters. You got some self-tests and so forth. And these characters, they're fun. Hurry, worry, ready, and willing. And so you kind of walk us through these four characters and these different aspects of our personality or our growth process.
So hurry is always going. Hurry, in our research, we discovered that 56% of working Americans are living life in a hurry. They don't have time to slow down to the speed of the moment. because they're on to the next thing. Research says that people touch their devices almost 2,000 times a day. So that I'm always in a hurry to the next thing. And then there's worry. Worry's waiting for the other shoe to drop. Worry has come across the research from Dr. Christian Mirescu at Princeton University. It says when the brain is worried, the brain slows down. It doesn't create neurogenesis, which is the process of growing neurons, which grows the brain. So worry is kind of living in the land, David, waiting for the other shoe to drop. Am I going to be laid off tomorrow? Is my budget going to be cut? Am I going to be told no? But then hurry and worry meet ready and steady at a surfing camp. And at the end of the lesson, they go, or the surfing lesson, they go and sit by a campfire, and ready and steady begin to ask hurry and worry the three questions, the most powerful questions that immerse people into a journey of thriving. But then, wait, there's one more. There's a fifth personality archetype that's outside the circle that is observing. Why are you guys meeting? And will you let me in the circle? And that fifth personality archetype is curious.
Curious. So the antidotes to hurry and worry, if as listener, as you're thinking about it, you get the book and you take the self-assessments to the back and you're like, ooh, I am a hurry. I am a worry. What are some of the ways we start to draw out of that? You mentioned some of the questions and so forth.
Yeah. So the first question that hurry and worry are invited to answer, because ready and steady have already done it, is what do you want for you? And that is the cognitive question that invites them to say, what is it that I really want? I'm just kind of working, kind of going through the motions. So they're invited to answer that question. And then the second question is the emotional question. What are you feeling? As you've just articulated what you want, how does that feel to really kind of put it out there into the ether? And then the third question is the behavioral question that invites you to look through the windshield of where you're going instead of the rearview mirror of where you've been. And that question is, what step are you willing to take to get what you want? And that third question kind of pulls it all together. So hurry and worry begin to answer these questions for themselves. And what they discover, they have everything they need to succeed. They just needed a sounding board to articulate to ready and steady and curious. Hey, here's what I want. Here's what I'm feeling. And here's one micro step that I can take tomorrow.
And those micro steps build momentum. These questions, they sound so simple, and yet, yeah, I have had at various times in my career and various times in my life had either a coach or a counselor or a friend, somebody say, David, what do you actually want? What do you want? And it is fascinating how often so many of us, and I'm speaking for myself here, have silenced or deadened or not considered that voice for whatever reason, lots of different reasons, but what do you want? And from that deep expression of the values and purpose and mission you're on, like that wellspring of what you actually want, there's so much power there, but if we're not asking ourselves that question, we're not going to tap into that, are we?
No. Florence Shin wrote a book in 1925 called How to Play the Game of Life and Win. And she makes a very powerful statement. She says the phone was seeking the bell. The tire was seeking the car. If we bring that into the modern world we live in, the microprocessor 1970 was seeking the internet. And then she makes this statement. I'm like, ooh la la. She says, what you want wants you. So we got to tee it up. What is it that we want as a human-centered leader?
What are you feeling? That's a powerful question, but I want to explore that more with you, Simon. What does that mean?
So the research, according to Gallup, that they've looked in 190 countries, and what they're saying, David, is roughly 7 out of 10 people in the workplace are dealing with high stress, anxiety, and borderline depression. So that means every single day you show up at a place of business, and if you are meeting virtually in the Hollywood squares or connecting with somebody face-to-face, 7 out of 10 are dealing with something. So when you say, what are you feeling? you're honoring the humanness of a person to say, and you may not say it like that. You might say, David, how are you doing? And I might be the first person that asks you how you are doing. Now, let's look at the research really quickly from Dr. Maria Music at University of Michigan. She says human beings need three things right now: to be seen, to be valued, and to be understood. So when we look and unpack, what are you feeling? How are you? You're seeing a human being. You're valuing them. You are inviting them to say whatever you're going to say next and answering that question. This is a judge-free zone. I'm going to hold space and I'm going to honor whatever you say. And what that person knows at a visceral, emotional level is that I'm not a human doing, but I'm a human being in this moment. That's the power of that question, David.
So that's the power of the question as we are asking it of others. And I want to come back to those three words that you used, that you mentioned from the research: seen, valued, understood. If we want more connected team members, more mentally healthy team members, more resilient team members, those are things that as we see, value, and understand the people that we are working with, all of those benefits accrue as we do that for them. And that's part of the entire human-centered leadership scene, right? Is, are we seeing, valuing, and understanding the people we're working with and all the good that comes from that? Simon, as you talk about this question, though, what are you feeling? There's incredible value for us to ask ourselves this question too, isn't there?
Absolutely. And I did not have the self efficacy or confidence or awareness to ask myself this question years ago. In fact, if the truth be told, I failed as a leader at Disney. I was in over my skis. I had a lot of ego. I was a boss with an agenda instead of a leader with a vision. And Disney was about to fire me, David. They were going to invite me to find my happiness elsewhere. And organizational development took me through the tried and true process of start, stop, and continue. And what they said to me in the feedback is I managed up really well. But when I looked at my direct reports, I truly ran an adult daycare center. And I was emotionally unavailable. I was using my position as a leader to get to the next rung of the ladder. So I had vertical ascension instead of horizontal connection. And what I recognize when I even look at that question, what are you feeling? This is probably one of the most important questions leaders can ask themselves right now, because people are taking a cue on how to be resilient by watching you. It's not what you're saying. It's not what you're typing or sending. It is how you are showing up. So there's a whole lot of talk around being purpose-driven. I think we got to talk about being presence-driven. And presence-driven is I am in touch with my emotions and I am comfortable to say, I don't know what I don't know. Let's figure it out.
Gosh, so much in there. And that, I agree with you. It's such a powerful question to ask. What are you feeling? And just like, what do you want? I think so often we can sometimes be afraid to acknowledge what we're feeling because we worry what we have to do with it if we acknowledge it. But those feelings are there and they're there for a reason and they don't go away. They only go underground and get stronger if we don't acknowledge them. So if someone's listening right now, we got a listener and they're thinking, okay, what am I feeling? Gosh, I don't even know where to begin. And I'm not sure what to do with it because I'm going to encounter maybe some negatives, some powerful emotions that I feel uncontainable. I'm not sure what to do with all those. What do we do with that? Where do we go next?
I think the first thing, practical step, is the 3-second pause. And a 3-second pause in business, emails, texts, whatever, before you respond, 3 seconds, 1, 2, 3. Take a deep breath and say, okay, what is the best response that I can give? And what you're doing is you're honoring where you are in that moment to slow down to the speed of the moment to say, I may not agree with this, But what's the best response? Before you hit send, is this the best response? Before you pick up the phone, before you respond, is this the best response? One, two, three. Then step in. It takes a little bit of the edge off of what might have come out in that moment.
And it acknowledges too for us where we are. And even just that acknowledgement lessens some of the intensity of those things and allows us to then make a choice that's going to be more as valuable as we can in that moment. And we can go back to the how am I going to add value question as well in whatever we're doing there. I'm curious, Simon, as you're talking about, you know, the story that you experienced of where you weren't emotionally available and maybe you weren't asking that question regularly. Was it that moment of feedback in that job that helped open the door for you, or did that come later?
That was the game changer right then and there. I think three things happened for me in that moment. I realized I needed to grow up as a leader. I needed to be vulnerable. Number two, I needed to be okay with receiving the feedback and not see it as a dig, or I would be so bold to say, and hear me in the spirit that I'm about to say this, that I didn't take it as a racial attack that they're trying to hold me back as a Black man. I didn't go there, right? I had to just say, this is honest feedback. And then I think number three, and this is probably most important, how was I going to improve the next day and every day thereafter to ensure that the feedback was taken, it was heard, and it was operationalized in my life? So it really invited me to grow up. And if the truth be told, David, I had a little incentive. I had a mortgage and I had to buy some milk and some Pampers. So...
Oh, well, that fair enough. And there are plenty of people who don't make that choice, even with the financial needs and so forth, and continue to struggle and gut their way through without choosing the path of vulnerability, without choosing the path of acknowledging what do I want? How am I feeling? What am I willing to do to get there? Those are not questions everybody's willing to look at. And, you know, you did.
I did, and it transformed my life. And in fact, one of the leaders that I was reporting to at the time, we both have since left Disney, but 22 years later, we've been gone. We still keep in contact because he was hard on me. He drove me, he pushed me, but he is my friend today, and I am forever grateful. And I still call him Mr. Lynch.
As well you should, right? That level of respect there. That's fantastic. Our guest today is Simon T. Bailey. The book that we're discussing is Resilience at Work, How to Coach Yourself into a Thriving Future. And so we've addressed a number of these self-coaching questions that that you can use with yourself. We've talked about what went well today, what is right about you, how can you reflect on how you're growing, how did I grow today or this week, how can I add value tomorrow. We've talked about what do you want? How are you feeling? What are you feeling? And then what are you willing to do? What step are you willing to take to get to where you want to be? So all these are fantastic self-coaching questions, things that our listeners can do right away. You've got some other things that you talk about in the book in terms of as we're developing our resiliency, Simon, and I want to call attention to a couple of them. Three things in particular that you say at one point, and one of them is you talk about boundaries. And this is one of those words that gets thrown around, and you know, in the TikTok era, it's easy for, you know, a concept to kind of run wild, and it's like so far removed from what it's supposed to be. So help us when we're talking about creating boundaries to be a resilient human being, a resilient leader. What are we talking about and how do we do it?
Here's the post-it note. The mental post-it note, it's the ability to say no to protect your yes. Whatever you have said yes to, I say no so that I am always developing and increasing my character. So boundaries is when you say no, it doesn't make you a bad person. You're just simply saying my character is so important that if I say yes to everything, I'm going to deplete my energy. I'm going to be negative. You're not going to get my best. And so that's number one, say no to protect your yes. I think number two, when I talk about boundaries, it's evaluating, is this opportunity, will it allow me to be effective or stay busy? And so once again, you're just kind of judging and weighing, because all of us have the same amount of time every single day. It's just how we use our time and how we deploy our energy to produce a result.
Yes, yes. And as you're saying no, I'm saying yes. our newest book, Powerful Phrases for Dealing with Workplace Conflict, the most popular chapter is the How Do I Say No? And for all the reasons that you're talking about. And you know, listener, if you're struggling with saying no, realize that, and Simon said it very well, you're protecting your yes, that every yes that you say is also 1,000 no's. And if you're saying yes to everything, you're saying no to some things, but now you're doing it unintentionally. You're doing it without practice, without deliberation, and it's all accidental. And so what's going to drop? Who knows? You're saying no to something, but you're no longer choosing. And I just think that's such a powerful concept. So we have say no to protect your yes. Mm-hmm. And then give us the second one again.
Am I busy or am I effective? So this response, is it going to allow me to be an effective person or just more busy work?
Effective or busy. And that goes back to knowing what you want, knowing what you're after. If we haven't asked those questions, we're not going to be able to make those choices. Mm-hmm. All right. So boundaries are a matter of saying no to protect the yes. Okay. Another concept you get into is that you're not responsible for someone else's reaction. And I think this is a critical one. And I would really love it if you could walk us through this a little bit.
So one of the things I've noticed over the years is when everyone shows up in life or business, everyone has a story, an experience, a know-how, an approach, and people don't see you as you are. They see you as they are. One of my mentors years ago said, within every person, there's a brain. Within every brain, there's a mental model, or what Peter Senge talks about is this perspective or approach. Within every mental model or approach, there is a shaper. And within every shaper, there is a story. So when I meet a person, I am not responsible for what they are going to react to, because they're coming from a story that has been shaped by a mental model that has created a mindset that lives in their brain. So what we have to do is meet at the table of possibility, and I have to ask questions. David, here's what I heard you say. Is this what you meant? And then in my own thinking, I have to say, well, here's what I'm thinking. Can we come to an agreement or understanding as we're both leaning into stories and finding a way forward?
The idea that everybody has their own stories going on, their own experience, all of that, and that all informs the reactions that we get, which sometimes make no sense to us. How do we balance that with the idea that as a leader, and we're all growing, we're all learning, and I may step on someone's toes or cause pain inadvertently, I didn't mean to, but I become aware that I did, where does my responsibility start and end in that equation in the different aspects of our leadership and in our work on teams and so forth?
I love this question, David. I think it really starts with, let's look at it in a business context and thinking of the customer at the center of every conversation. So if our goal is to serve a customer when it's all said and done, as you know, Amazon keeps a one seat at the table that represents the customer. Apple is about design thinking. How do we, when it's all said and done, is this the right thing for the customer? And if we start with that understanding, we take ego, we take meanness out of the way to get to the we-ness of how do we move forward. That's number one, customer first. Secondly, as we're modeling for the team, what is the transferable learning that is happening for leaders that are coming up in the organization. As they witness, we're solving problems, we're having tough conversations. How are they learning on the fly? How to lean in, how to disagree without being disrespectful, how to push back, how to ask deeper questions, but keep coming back to the center. How does this benefit the customer, internal customer, external customer? And then the third thing is, how do we begin to give feedback on how everyone showed up to play full out when we're looking at whatever we're dealing with? So what happens, David, now I take away, I may not have agreed, but I learned something. I became a better human. I watched other humans react to a situation, and we both took something away that benefited the customer, that solved the problem. And you know what? I don't feel less than, I feel more than. So it's always thinking we're modeling something for team members who may leave tomorrow. But what are we doing? What are we saying? How are we showing up?
That's powerful. And I like the we-ness, not the me-ness. Nice. The, you know, you just touched on something that relates back to the boundary issue, which is, okay, it's the willingness to say no to protect the yes and to make the decisions and to be effective, because it's always coming back to the, what is the purpose here? That means saying no sometimes, which is a skill. And I know that, you know, we talk a lot about it, but I am curious your perspective. It's a critical skill, knowing how to say no. How do you recommend people invest in a healthy no? What does that look like? How can we do that effectively?
I think depending on what the situation is, so I'll just use myself as an example. One of my failures, and a lot of reason why I talk about failures is because I think it's very educational. You know, we learn quicker, faster from a mistake. You know, if you look in the dictionary, failure comes before success. So I've been presented with a number of opportunities. And what I've realized, David, is not all money is good money. Mm-hmm. So a part of how I say no is, well, tell me about this person. Tell me about their character. Tell me about who have they done business with, number one. Number two, one of the mistakes that I've made is I was chasing for many years that dollar. And I got into a business deal and I went and told my then wife about this opportunity. And she says, I want to meet these people. And I'm like, don't worry, the numbers look good. I'm just going on. And she says, no, 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 I want to meet them. We go to lunch. After lunch, we get in the car. She says, I don't know what deal you got into with these folks. You need to get out of that deal. And David, can I tell you, she was right. I had to basically call my lawyer and sue them to get out of the deal. Best decision ever. I could have totally avoided it if I would have just brought her in a little bit sooner to say, hey, what's your sense in this moment? I can't quite see or hear everything. And because women have an intuition, that is not chauvinistic, it is true. Women have a sixth sense about things that sometimes men miss. So I think I could have, in my failure, how I've said no is to slow down to the speed of the moment. And my current wife, Jody, I'll say, babe, what do you think about this? And she'll give me a whole dissertation. Here's five things you need to think about. I'm like, whoa. But it helps me with my decision. I think the third thing in saying no is, when I say no, what drove me to the no is I didn't have peace in my spirit. If I can just go scriptural just for a moment, the Bible says, and God will give you peace that passeth all understanding. So peace for me is the umpire of the soul. Out. When the umpire says out or strike or ball, if I don't have that peace, then I'm not going to go. I heard a guy years ago say, if you don't know, don't go. Real simple, real simple, right? But if you don't know, just, it's okay to say no. You sleep better at night.
And there's so many ways to implement that sense of knowing, right? You know, whether we call it peace, whether you call it, there's some people that'll do like a, you know, just a physical test, like, and examine how does your body react to one direction versus the other, and listen to that and get in touch with those responses. Because you're, as you said earlier, your soul knows if you can get into it and find out the answer there. That's powerful. You were reminding me of, I heard Fly Girl, Vernice R. Morse, talk some time ago. She was talking to a group of speakers and business owners and things. And she said, I need money. I don't necessarily need your money. And that, you know, that recognition of, not, as you said, not all money is good money, right? And not every deal is a good deal. And not everything that your manager asks you to do is a good ask, ultimately. Not every request from your team, not every idea you have, you know? So as we learn the discernment and the ability to say no, we're always saying yes to something. So, you know, as we're saying yes, let's start with the yes. I want to say yes to this person. I want to say yes to the project, the goals that we're trying to the customer. And sometimes that's the beginning of the no. So some good ways to do that. All right. Again, our guest today, Simon T. Bailey, the name of the book. And I do encourage you, you want to explore this more, Resilience at Work, How to Coach Yourself into a Thriving Future. Simon, where do we connect with you, find out more? Where would you send our listener today?
You can go to simontbailey.com. I'm Simon T. Bailey on all social media. LinkedIn is kind of where I hang out. And then if you go to resilienceatwork.co, we've got a few pieces that you can download to really immerse yourself into the journey. They're free downloads that invite you to really look at how do you coach yourself into a thriving future.
Fantastic. Well, we'll get those links into the show notes as well for you. Simon, as we get closer to wrapping up here, I have to say, and you mentioned this earlier, that the kind of the metaphor in the book is these four are hurry, worry, ready, and steady are surfing, and they're all learning to surf, and so that's the metaphor you use, which I want to explore. But I have to tell you, I had a little post-traumatic stress, and I'm like, ooh, I got to be resilient here. So earlier this summer, so I grew up in Colorado, no ocean experience, right? And so this summer, I was with my wife's family, who's all from the East Coast. They were boogie boarding before they were walking, and so I went out boogie boarding with them, and it was fun. I'm learning, they're teaching me. The second day, I'm on the last wave in, and I get too high on the wave and then hit a sandbar, and it just smashes me head first straight in that sandbar. I'm like bleeding from my forehead. I've jacked my neck up. I'm a mess. I said, I'm done. That's it. And my brother-in-law, he's a Lutheran pastor. He says, I'm never getting you back out there, am I? I said, not on one of those things. So, in the spirit of fun, I'm not asking you to get me back out surfing, but why did you choose surfing and as the metaphor here? Because I think there's a lot to that in why you chose to do it.
Because business and life is like surfing in the ocean. With uncertainty and everything happening in the world, in the economy, you get knocked off your surfboard, but it's your resilience that allows you to pop back up and get back on the surfboard. And it's your brilliance that allows you to catch the next wave. And so what I'm inviting people to really understand is when I get back on the surfboard, no matter what has happened in life, another wave is going to appear. Can I take the wave?
And you, in that spirit, you have a line in the book that I just thought was fantastic. And I thought about this line as I was thinking about the Olympic surfer this past summer, who, you know, just has that magnificent wave and then pops up and he's got his finger raised. The picture the photographer captures, this amazing photo and so forth. But the line that you said, and this relates to him and all of us, they won't remember you for your wipeouts.
No. And wipeouts happen every day. And the wipeouts is where you learn and grow. So you want the wipeouts because you're not going to be on the top of the wave all the time. But wipeouts is what make us happen. Like the valley allows us to celebrate on the mountain.
And so I started thinking as I read that line in the book, Simon, I was thinking about that Olympic surfer and with his finger raised. And I'm like, how many wipeouts in his surfing career led to that moment? And he just has this natural ease and facility on the water that I will never have and don't need to acquire. but it was, you know, just so amazing and elegant. But how many wipeouts were by? Nobody remembers any of his wipeouts. They're going to remember that. And that's the case for all of us, isn't it?
Yes, it is indeed.
Powerful. All right, Simon, thank you so much for being our guest today. Listener, you have got so many practical takeaways today. Among them, those questions that you can ask to coach yourself. The what went well today, starting to build your resilience. What is right about you? Reflecting on where have I grown? How can I add value? Then we had the what do you want? How are you? What are you feeling? And what step are you willing to take? Along with all of the others, boundaries, saying no, investing in the fact that you're not responsible for other people's reactions. We have so many different practical takeaways. If you've got one practical tool you can use today to help you be a more effective human-centered leader, please A, do it, take action, B, leave a review on your favorite platform to let others know. And if you can think of somebody in your life who could use these same tools that Simon just shared with us today, please send them the episode. Help them the same way that you got today. And Simon, thank you so much for helping us to be the leader that we'd want our boss to be. Thank you. All right. Until next time.
All righty. Thank you so much and take care.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.